This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. Opacity, as we've heard, is antithetical to public health in a pandemic. But there are more ways to undermine public trust and cooperation than suppressing bad news. Because when news is bad or simply uncertain, human behavior can go in all the wrong directions. But for public health authorities, this is not their first rodeo. Through polio in the 1950s to H1N1 in 2009 to Ebola from 2014 to 2016, their experience has coalesced into a compendium of best practices for informing the public, a literal playbook published by the CDC's Epidemic Intelligence Service. It's dedicated to the do's and the please, please, please don'ts of pandemic communications. In a recent New Yorker article, Charles Duhigg wrote the tale of two cities, Seattle and New York, struck back-to-back with coronavirus outbreaks. One city's leaders followed the CDC guidelines to the letter. The others did not. But before we go there, let's begin with what does the playbook recommend?
One of the very strong suggestions in that field book is that when it comes to health advice and scientific updates, put the scientists front and center. And Richard Besser, who used to be the acting director of the CDC, I think he put it best when he said, look, the problem is if you put a politician on the stage, there's a very realistic chance that 50% of the audience is going to do the opposite of what he or she says because they didn't vote for that person, they don't trust that person, they don't like that person.
And what should that spokesperson be saying?
They should primarily be doing two things. The first is to make a statement of empathy because you want the listener to know that the person who's giving them advice has their interests first and foremost in their mind. And then the second thing that they need to do is they need to say what they know and what they don't know.
They should go all Donald Rumsfeld and talk about known knowns, unknown knowns, known unknowns, and so forth.
That's exactly right. And they should do it as simply as possible. In fact, in the CDC's epidemiology field manual, what they recommend is before every single press conference, before every single interview, you sit down and you figure out what's known as a SOCO, which is a single overriding health communication objective. People are panicked when they're talking about health, right? When I'm listening to someone talk about a pandemic, I am anxious. And that means that I'm going to listen and absorb much less information than normal. And so what the communicator, the scientist, or the spokesperson wants to do is they want to figure out what is the one piece of essential information that I can communicate, and how can I say that in the fewest number of words, and how can I repeat it again and again and again? Richard Besser, the former acting head of the CDC, told me that before he did press conferences, he would actually sit down with his SOCO, which would just be one or two sentences, and he would remove as many words as he can. And then you say it at the beginning of the interview, you say it at the end of the interview, you say it throughout the interview. That's why during periods of this coronavirus pandemic, you would hear spokespeople say things like, wash your hands and cough into your elbow. They would say it again and again and again.
A good example of this playbook in action, you say, happened during the Obama administration with the H1N1 epidemic. What happened there?
When the H1N1 pandemic was first detected in the United States, and it was a very serious outbreak, over 12,000 Americans died, over 700 school districts were shut down. The reason we don't particularly remember it is because the response from the Obama White House was almost a picture-perfect adherence to the principles of communication that the CDC has put forth about how we ought to speak and behave during a pandemic. Obama actually said very little publicly about H1N1. Instead, he handed off communications to the director of the CDC, who at the time was Richard Besser, and was replaced by a guy named Tom Frieden. And what would happen is that those scientists would stand up and give a briefing every single day at noon from the CDC.
Let me provide for you an update in terms of where we are today and what kinds of public health actions are being taken here as well as abroad. Today, we can confirm that there are 20 cases of swine flu.
And Obama stayed in the background. He only spoke about H1N1 a few times. And when he did, he always took great pains to compliment the Republicans.
The Bush administration did a good job of creating the infrastructure so that
he was trying to signal to folks, this is something that transcends party divisions, and we're giving you advice based on science.
At the outset of this, we said that it would be a tale of two cities, New York, but also Seattle.
Seattle was the first hotspot.
There were 27 confirmed cases yesterday. There are now 39. We don't know how many cases are really out there. That is why there's
Seattle has essentially controlled coronavirus. Not only did they do the things that the CDC handbook recommends, like putting the scientists front and center.
My name is Dr. Kathy Lofi. I am the state health officer at the Washington State Department of Health, and I want to give you a little bit of an update.
First, I want to add my voice to Dow's to send our deepest condolences to the loved ones of those who have passed. And our heartfelt thoughts to those who are...
The most important steps that individuals can take to improve their health and decrease their risk of getting sick currently are basic hand hygiene, wash your hands frequently, more hand washing.
But equally, they started a conversation very early where they said, we need to shut everything down. Jeff Duchin, who's the top public health doctor in Seattle, turned to one of the top politicians and he said, if I had my druthers, what we would do is we would shut everything down today. Then he said, look, I know that if we said that today, no one's going to follow our advice. In fact, we're going to undermine our credibility because they're going to think that we're overreacting. So the question is, if we want to tell everyone to stay home 4 days from now, what do we say today to get them ready for that? So not only did they start having press conferences with that principle in mind, they also started taking other actions. For instance, Dow Constantine, who's the top politician of King County, which includes Seattle, called Brad Smith, who's the president of Microsoft. Then he said, I want to ask you a favor. Tell all of your employees to stay home from work tomorrow. Now, Microsoft at that point had not had one diagnosis of coronavirus. But Dow Constantine and Brad Smith knew that if Microsoft stayed home, it would send a message to the entire state. This is so serious that Microsoft, this huge company, is telling everyone to stay home. I need to start taking this more seriously myself. Amazon also agreed to ask all of its employees to stay home from headquarters.
So it was modeling on a mass scale.
Absolutely. And it made a drastic impact. One person told me that he woke up the next morning, drove to work, and there was 100,000 cars missing from the highway because of Amazon and Microsoft employees who had stayed home. He knew something serious was going on because the streets were empty. The same thing is true of closing schools. When cities shut down schools to stop the spread of coronavirus, part of it was that kids are a vector for transmission. But the other part of it is that it sends a message even to people who aren't parents. Things are serious.
So that was Seattle. Then there was New York, where it played out very differently. Mayor Bill de Blasio, and also when the threat first emerged, Governor Andrew Cuomo took precisely the position that the handbook says you shouldn't take.
It's important, just go about your lives.
The facts are not very frightening.
That's right. And that's an understandable instinct, right? As a political leader, you want to help people calm down. It's also worth noting that Mayor de Blasio had been applauded for doing that in the past. A few years earlier, there was a patient with Ebola in New York City. And Mayor de Blasio, after the patient recovered, gave that patient a hug in public. He went to the restaurant where that patient had eaten to show that things were safe now. You don't have to be worried about getting Ebola.
Meatballs for the mayor, his wife, and the city's health commissioner. 4 days after the city's now only known Ebola-positive patient ate here. And 2 days after the patient, Dr. Craig Spencer, was admitted to Bellevue Hospital diagnosed with Ebola.
It just turned out that in the coronavirus case, that was the wrong thing to do. And in his defense, you know, most people didn't understand how contagious and how deadly the coronavirus was at that particular moment. Now, the problem is that epidemiologists did understand that, including his own health department, because they were watching Seattle, because they were watching Wuhan, and they were kicking and screaming and saying, do not tell people to go to the movies. Do not tell people that this is not a big deal. In fact, they were saying, shut down the restaurants, shut down the bars, shut down the schools. And de Blasio was resistant to doing so. Again, in his defense, he had good reasons to be resistant. One of the arguments that he made was, if you shut down all of New York City's schools, it disproportionately negatively impacts our most vulnerable kids. There was also small business owners who have been devastated by these shutdowns. But the Department of Health said, no, this coronavirus, it is bigger than those concerns. And in fact, Some of them felt so strongly that they marched into his office and told people in City Hall that they were going to quit and resign if de Blasio did not shut down the schools and the bars and the restaurants. And eventually the mayor and the governor did exactly that. But by then the coronavirus had escaped. And at this point, over one in every 600 residents of New York City has died because of COVID.
Now, once the severity of the infection had, you know, become all too obvious, and once the death toll started to mount, and once the hospitals began to be overwhelmed, both de Blasio and Cuomo came around, and they, for the most part, started governing as if they understood the stakes. And Cuomo, in particular, was practically venerated for his daily press conferences.
Only essential businesses will be functioning. People can work at home, God bless you, but only essential businesses.
And as such, though, Cuomo violated principle one of the playbook, you know, let the public health officials do the talking.
The problem is that this is all being done in the context of President Trump having a daily briefing. And so Andrew Cuomo stepping forth and becoming the spokesperson for a data-driven and scientific approach to dealing with the pandemic, as opposed to a political or emotional approach, I don't think that's a terrible idea, because I don't know that a scientist would as easily become the foil or the counterpoint to what the president is saying from the White House.
We are speaking on Wednesday. On Tuesday, Dr. Anthony Fauci testified before the Senate, issuing warnings about the likely trajectory of the disease.
Even under the best of circumstances, when you pull back on mitigation, you will see some cases appear.
And the gaps in our federal and local response, in direct contradiction to various uncorroborated assertions by the president. What happens when we get to see the conflict between those following playbook item one and those not following it, essentially speaking at the same time and leading the public to very different conclusions?
The real risk that we're seeing right now is that when we see such confusing advice, it just raises the stakes that someone sitting at home is going to say, you know what, I'm not going to listen to anyone. And that person goes outside without a mask. They congregate with a bunch of other people. The virus spreads. It starts to exponentially move through a community. And as a result, more people die.
I'm just following that thread in my mind, and it's just kind of whelmed me.
Literally right before we started talking, I was talking to a friend of mine whose brother just passed away, like literally a week and a half ago. He was a doctor in Manhattan. It's really easy, particularly when, like, we're watching TV and this seems like just another chapter in a political battle that's been going on for 4 years. But particularly living in New York, and I think you know this, the toll is immense. It is not a contest of perspectives or a contest of who ought to be right or moral superiority. It's a scientific question. And the more that we step back and we listen to the science and we listen to the scientists, the more lives we are going to be able to save.
Charles, thank you.
Thank you.
Charles Duhigg is the host of the podcast How To with Charles Duhigg. His article in The New Yorker is titled Seattle's Leaders Let Scientists Take the Lead, New York's Did Not. Coming up, if a rotten tree falls in the forest and millions watch it on YouTube, well, not good. This is On the Media.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.